One mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice. One mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice. One mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice. One mic, one voice.
Welcome to the One Mic, One Voice show, Building the Collective Conscience, a show that is created to give space where your ideas and form opinions can be heard, appreciated, and debated. I am Michael Eric Owens, and I'm a little solo right now. I'm in the studio with Richard. DT, of course, is he's a very busy man, and we ran into some schedule conflicts today, but he's on his way. He will show up sometime during this broadcast, but you know, I'm excited, man, because there's so much going on in our world today. There's many challenges, and you know, I just love, and I'm gonna have to talk to Richard because I can't talk to nobody else just yet, but I just love when you're looking for an expert to come on your show and they simply say, "Where you want me to be there?" I mean, that's bad right there. Usually, folks, let me check my schedule, let me do this, talk to my secretary. But I'm telling you here, folks, I'm very excited about today's guest that we have on here. I'm not going to tell you who it is yet. But with the challenges that we face, we need to talk to, I think, individuals that have their finger on the pulse of our society. Oftentimes, we're talking to them, to ourselves. We're talking to folks that have no idea the complexities of situations. And listen, when you don't know, go to someone that has the information, that has the experience. I mean, I was just having lunch today, Richard, with a person that we were talking about the challenges that we face here in Oklahoma and how difficult it is to get people to understand that it's not simple. That these challenges that we face are extremely complex. However, when you have a lack of experience, a lack of exposure to other races, to other cultures, you don't get it. And so, but today we're gonna get it. Okay, today we're gonna roll out some real information for you. And folks, let me tell you something. You need to get situated. You need to sit down. You need to relax. Because I'm here to tell you, we have a dynamic guest on. As always, get your special mix. And we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
What's up, guys? I am Leah Marie, owner of The Selfie Gods. Make sure you head over to our website, www.theselfiegods.com, and order your very own selfie moon. If you need that good lighting whenever you out in the club or you out hanging out with your friends and you need some more light for your selfies, that's definitely what you want to get, the selfie moon.
My name is Adam Sultani, Executive Director of the Council on American Islamic Relations. And when I listen to podcasts, I always listen to One Mic, One Voice.
Welcome back to the One Mic, One Voice show. Okay, folks, I told you we have an exciting guest in the studio today from the Council on American Islamic Relations, CARE, I believe. And Adam Sultani, which is the executive director of CARE, is here today. And before he pipes in, let me just give you the mission of this organization. Is to enhance the understanding of Islam, encourage dialogue, protect civil liberties, empower American Muslims, and build coalitions that promote justice and mutual understanding. I love it. I love the mission. Adam, thank you so much for being here with us. And welcome to the One Mic, One Voice show.
Thank you for having me. Wonderful introduction. I normally don't get such a nice introduction, so I appreciate that.
Well, we're trying to take care of you here. We want you to come back. And but talk a little bit more about CARE and what do you do. Kind of talk about the history of it so our listeners can. And keep in mind that we have listeners all across the globe. I mean, on the continent as well as United Kingdom,
sure.
of course, throughout most of the United States. So if you could just share that info with them, I appreciate it.
Sure. So CARE was founded in 1994 in Washington, D.C. by two individuals who still work for CARE, Nihad Awad, who's the National Executive Director, and Ibrahim Hooper, he's the Communications Coordinator. And they founded CARE as an organization that would be the civil rights group that would defend the rights of American Muslims. You know, in the post-Iranian Revolution world in the 80s and 90s, there were a lot of stereotypes in movies and on TV about Arabs and Muslims. And there were things that were starting to pop up in the late 80s, early 90s that involved discrimination of Muslims in the United States. So they said, we really need a group that will be like the NAACP or the ACLU specifically for the Muslim community. And that's exactly what they founded. And then after they founded the national chapter, they started seeking places where they could have statewide chapters. Los Angeles and San Francisco were the next ones to follow in line. Oklahoma came along many years later. We actually this year are celebrating our 10th year anniversary. So we've been around for 10 years. And the reason Oklahoma was founded as a chapter is because there were several cases in Oklahoma of civil rights discrimination. Two in particular, one, a young African-American Muslim girl in Muskogee, I believe it was, in 2004, she was denied the right to wear her religious headscarf when she went to school. And that case went to the Supreme Court, but it went to several court cases, and she finally won the right to wear her headscarf. And the another one was a young 16-year-old girl in Tulsa, Oklahoma, that she wanted to take her driver's license picture wearing the religious headscarf. Now, for people who don't know, it's called the hijab. It's something that women that believe firmly in the religion, they wear this to cover their hair, and they don't take it off except in front of their male relatives and their husband. So she did not want to remove it to take her driver's license photo, and she reached out to our national office. So when several cases like that start popping up, they realize there's a need for a chapter in a place like this.
Absolutely. The Oklahoma, first of all, how many would you say Muslims are in Oklahoma?
Really not that much. Mm-hmm. Actually, there are only about 40,000 Muslims at best, which is about 1% of the state's population. When you compare that to Chicago, where there's almost 500,000 Muslims, mm-hmm. it's really not that many at all.
And you can, I mean, I can see the need for some sort of protection because being such a small number and being a minority myself, I understand the vulnerability that comes along with that. Mm-hmm. Okay, let me reference this by saying before I came to Oklahoma, I didn't know much about Oklahoma at all. And the folks that I kind of knew about Oklahoma kind of tried to discourage me from coming to Oklahoma. How do you find the climate, you know, for Muslims in Oklahoma?
It's a mix between being really good and really bad. I think one thing about Oklahoma is that because we're a state where things slow down a little bit, you know, it's not like when you go to D.C. or Chicago and people are just, it's the hustle and bustle of life and people don't have time to sit down and have a conversation. So I think in Oklahoma, people are generally friendly. They do want to have a conversation with you. If you can get to that point, you can really have a discussion and dialogue about who you are, different cultures and things like that. So that is the good. The bad is that there are a lot of people who don't want to understand because they have been just handed misinformation years after year after year. In fact, I met a pastor from a church north of Tulsa. I can't remember. It was a small town. And I met him at an interfaith gathering here in Oklahoma City. And we were talking about what we call Islamophobia, or the fear of Islam and Muslims. And he said, you know what, Adam? I try in my church to really open up this dialogue, but the people in my town, all they do is they watch certain news channels. They watch certain things on the internet, and I cannot get them to believe that Muslims are friends and neighbors.
Wow.
So I think there are a lot of challenges in our state, and that's just something we got to deal with day by day.
And when you were talking, I was thinking about several years ago, this whole debate about Sharia law in Oklahoma,
right.
And how just how twisted that debate became. Mm-hmm. What were your thoughts when that was going on?
You know, it's funny because before that happened, as a Muslim, I never even used the term Sharia. I mean, no Muslim really. It's not like we're going, hey, what's up? How's your Sharia doing today or something?
Right, right.
It was not a common term because Sharia is the moral code of conduct. So it's basically our entire religious teachings in one bag, if you want to look at it that way. So it teaches me how to interact with God and how to interact with people, whether they be Muslim or not Muslim. But in no way, shape, or form does Sharia call for the beheading of people or stoning of people or anything that people claimed it did. So it was really quite bizarre. And I really tried to explain to people. At that time, I worked for a state agency, and I had a lot of coworkers that were curious, and they knew I was Muslim. And so I tried to explain to them what it really is, and still they just couldn't quite get it, because certain politicians and the media did a really good job of trying to say this is a big threat to our country. It's going to take over, you know, and there's no actual threat and there's no proof. And that's why Judge LaGrange, who ruled in favor of the Constitution and against the anti-Sharia amendment, she said there was no proof that could be provided that Sharia was ever an imminent threat to our state or country. So it's just, it was a really bizarre time for us.
It was like one of those, non-issues, really, that always becomes, gets some sort of substance behind it because of the media and because of the talking heads. And I just, fear. There is so much fear of the unknown. I can identify with you, with the Muslim community, because I happen to be black. You know what I mean? So I know the ostracism that can happen. I know simply because you look at me, you judge me. You know me,
right?
And I just think we're living in such a dangerous time where these sweeping, I think, not just arguments about people, but these sweeping quote unquote axioms of people that are being propagated from the highest level.
Right.
I mean, let's talk for a minute about the national level and the dialogue that is happening on the national level when it comes to immigration, when it comes to Muslim in this country, when it comes to terrorism. What are your thoughts about that national dialogue?
Some very dangerous rhetoric coming out of some of our politicians. I mean, when we have a man running for the highest office in our country that wants to ban Muslims from entering the U.S. and wants to surveil all mosques and wants to advocate for profiling of Muslims, that is very concerning to me. You cannot hold the position of president of the United States and not embrace our diversity. We're a country of immigrants. And the whole idea, I mean, onto the immigration thing, the whole idea that immigrants pose a threat to this country is just another unfounded fear. Yeah. There's no proof that immigrants have ever done anything to threaten the lives of others. Even what happened in Paris, I mean, it was absolute horrendous, act, a tragedy, but it was even found out later that those people weren't even really Syrian refugees, So, I mean, the whole thing is one of those political things, I call it political football, that people like to throw around and use it for their own personal gain. And I think that's what happened with the immigrant thing. They said, oh, this thing happened in Paris, this is our time, yes, let's jump on it, let's ban immigrants, let's not allow them in the country, but we really need to. We are the country that was founded upon immigrants. So we need to continue to embrace the immigrant population. Syria is the largest refugee population in the world. Half of their original population from about 5 years ago are now refugees. Mm-hmm. How can we ignore that? And we want to claim we're the greatest country on earth. We really have to do something.
Yeah, and you're so correct. I couldn't agree with you more on that complete analysis. I was saying the other day about how we talk about banning Muslims and, how Donald Trump had made this reference to this psycho in Orlando and how his parents were immigrants from Afghanistan and somehow, but he was born here in New York. But this guy that perpetrated the mass murder was born here. And I mean, Dylan Roof.
Right.
Okay. So when we said we're going to ban all white people, I mean, that would be preposterous, right? People would say, what are you talking about?
Right.
But what I do know is It happens in the Muslim community. It happens in the Black community. It happens in the Latino community, where one act indirectly is inferred to the entire group.
Right.
You know, but when a white person does an act, it's an individual act.
Right.
That's, and nobody wants to have that conversation. Why would we ever infer that to the entire population?
Yeah.
Of citizens that are doing great things in our country. It's just, it's, to me, it's sickening that we allow for that sort of language, get this, on the top level of government.
Right. It is a huge, huge problem. You know what gets me time and time again? It's exactly what you said. Why are we, as people, as a Muslim community, 40,000 in Oklahoma, why are we held responsible for the actions of one person?
Exactly.
I mean, you know, I could give a ton of examples, but I think you said it just right there. If a white person commits a crime, they're not called a Christian terrorist, and then all of Christianity or all of white Christians are not considered responsible for the act. And there's a very good example that happened right here in Oklahoma. In 2014, in September, there was that horrendous act of the man in Moore, Oklahoma, yeah. Alton Nolan. He beheaded his coworker. Mm-hmm. Now, one area where I was very unhappy is where the police chief of Moore, he came out and he said, well, he was aggressively trying to convert his workers to Islam. Now, what the media heard was, uh-oh, he's Muslim. We better start really looking into this. 2 weeks go by, and I mean, we're slammed with media requests. Fox News is covering it as if it's really that's the actual thing that happened. Come to find out, he was racially motivated. Mm-hmm. He's mentally unstable, all these things. But a few weeks later, so I think early October, the exact same crime happened in Stillwater, Oklahoma, by a white Christian who called himself a Christian extremist. He considered himself that, and he beheaded his roommate because they did not agree on religious, you know, issues. But that barely got any news coverage. Mm. So why does an act of a man who we didn't even know as a Muslim community, he had mental issues, he had been in prison, he had a history of crime, he even attacked a sheriff in Oklahoma. So he is a violent person, obviously, from his past. Why does that represent us, and what happened in Stillwater has no impact on anyone else, which it shouldn't. I'm not saying it should, but why is it that it has a negative impact on us? And Orlando, same thing.
Yeah.
We had to, as an organization, as a community, we had to rush to condemn this act because we knew that people are going to look at us and wonder what's going on. And now come to find out the guy is possibly gay. Mm-hmm. He was an alcoholic, had mental issues, suspended from school almost 48 times or something. I mean, a lot of problems. Mm-hmm. And now just this morning, I even read that the FBI was trying to entrap him in a terrorist case, you know? And I mean, there's multiple layers to this thing. But nobody's talking about that, and I don't know how we can get there as a country. Yeah, I really don't.
Yeah. Well said, my friend. Extremely well said. We're going to take a break, folks. We're having a wonderful conversation. We're going to get into – I want to talk a little bit about just what you introduced, what happened in Orlando as it relates to this term called radical Islam. Folks, we will be right back.
Hi, this is Tiffany Hill, host of Authentic Conversations, a weekly motivational podcast where we discuss matters such as self-worth, relationships, parenting, professional development, physical, emotional, and spiritual health. You can find me on Facebook at Authentic Conversations by Tiffany Hill, on social media at @th_authentic, and you can also subscribe to Authentic Conversations on iTunes and Podbean, and the show is also available on blackinstudios.com. I look forward to connecting with you, and remember, to live authentically is the ultimate form of happiness.
My name is Kareem Muhammad, Executive Director of Teachers Appreciation Foundation. When I listen to podcast radio, I'm always tuned in to One Mic, One Voice. Thank you.
Welcome back to the One Mic, One Voice show. Oh, man. You know what? I said last week that the sun was shining when my daughter came in. I hope she ain't listening to this. Because DT just walked in.
I'm back, you, baby. I'm back, baby.
And we were telling how you had such a busy day and your schedule got kind of turned around, and but you were able to make it. And, man, we're so happy to hear you, man. Adam has been doing such a phenomenal job just giving us knowledge.
Yeah,
I mean, really. And so we're delighted to have you. You doing all right?
I'm doing well, man. Like you said, I had a tight schedule today, but pulled it out, man. Made it to the show. Now I'm feeling a lot better.
Man, it's hot outside.
It is hot. It is hot. I actually had to change shirts on the way in here because the shirt I had on was completely drenched in sweat.
Man, it is hot outside. But we want to get back to this discussion we were having about what happened in Orlando. I don't even want to name the guy. Don't want to give him any merit or credence to who he is. But we know 49 dead, 53 injured in this heinous act. The problem I have, and folks, you've been listening to this show now. This is episode 41. Richard looking at me. I know it's 41. So you're supposed to know that. You're the engineer, 41. Huh? You the owner of the podcast studio. You supposed to know that. Yes, it's 41. 41. Just shake your head. But you know, I'm tired of the generalizations that happen in our culture. Mm-hmm. I'm tired of people saying to me, well, what does the black community think? I don't know what the black community think. I can tell you what I think.
Yeah.
I can't speak for an entire community, but we talked about before the break how this is just one act, whether it is directly or indirectly associated with an ethnicity, a religious group, whatever. How you going to hold that entire group or race of people accountable for the act of one or two or three people? What about personal accountability? But Adam, you talked a little bit about just this guy's history.
Yeah.
I mean, the mental illness that this guy had.
Right.
The amount of times he had been suspended. I mean, he was not a poster child to begin with.
No, not at all.
And so what are your feelings when somebody says, well, you know, this guy is a representation of Islam, is radical Islam. Talk to us about your views on this term, radical Islam.
I think we need to stop using it. Mm. I mean, here's the thing. Islam is a religion. A radical is a radical, and we need to stop combining the words together because people are confused. They don't understand the difference. When you say radical Islam, when you start using terms like jihadist, I mean, you got these are words that are linking acts of crime and violence to religion. Yet, we talked about Dylann Roof. When a white man goes and kills black people in a church, he's not a Christian terrorist.
Yeah.
Timothy McVeigh, one of the largest terrorist acts on American soil, he was not called a Christian terrorist. Mm. But he could be just as Christian as the guy was Muslim. Absolutely. In Orlando. You know, I mean, that's the thing is that we really need to start differentiating as a country, because what we're doing is we're lumping everyone together. And what people don't understand, or what some people don't understand, is that it's causing real consequences for the Muslim community. Islamophobia, I mentioned the term earlier, it is a real thing that we're dealing with as a community that has led to hate crimes, vandalism of religious centers, you know, attacks on person and property. It's led to bullying of students in schools. Not far from here, on 50th and May in Oklahoma City, we've got a mosque that was vandalized twice. In 2012 and 2013. And I had to be there both times. And I mean, for people to go and spray paint pictures of male genitalia and words that I can't even repeat on this podcast on the front of any religious institution, there's got to be hatred built up that comes as a result of people using these terms. I mean, there's so many unfortunate incidents that happened in Joplin, Missouri. A mosque was burned to the ground. Thank God nobody was in it. You know, we had a man here, a limo driver. He was from Pakistan, and he was beaten up and cursed at by one of his customers because he was from Pakistan, called an effing terrorist, and told to go back to his country. I mean, this is the real impact of using these terms on the people who live in this country. And that case I just mentioned about the Pakistani limo driver, that was one of the hardest things I ever had to deal with, because he came to me, he said, Adam, these scars, he had bruises on his chest and his arms. He said, these wounds, they'll heal, but my heart won't heal. Mm. I came to this country because I believed in the American dream, but my spirit has been crushed, and I no longer believe in that dream. And that's really sad to me.
Yeah, that is a terrible representation of our country. And I just, the hatred last week, our show was titled, you know, Why Do We Hate? And we examine hatred and in the fear, again, of the unknown. But how do we begin to talk about, separate the two? Let's talk first of all about, you know, just people being radicalized.
Yeah, right. Okay. I mean, aside from religion, even there are people who are not genuinely good, you know.
Exactly.
And so whether or not they identify as Christian, whether or not they identify as Muslim, whether or not they identify with any religious orientation, there are people that are not good in the world. You
right.
know? So like Mike is saying, how do we decipher just radical, period, rather than it be radical Islam or radical Christianity or radical anything else aside from this person has some issues that they need to deal with.
Absolutely.
That have nothing to do with religious orientation.
Absolutely.
Right.
And whether the person is influenced by a perverted view of a religion.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about the Ku Klux Klan.
Yeah.
That's a perverted view of Christianity, right?
Absolutely.
There was a time in this country where they were marching and hanging and burning and doing all types of stuff to people. Matter of fact, you still got, in Oklahoma, you got chapters of the KKK, mm-hmm. okay? So there is perverted, okay, factions that someone will take a religion, use it for their own purpose. That doesn't mean Christianity is jacked up. It doesn't mean Islam right. is jacked up. And I agree with you. We have to separate this conversation. These are bad people that have mental illness that maybe they simply are looking for something. You know, mm-hmm. they're looking to fit. Why do people join gangs? Okay? Because they belong. They find a place to fit in. Mm-hmm. Why do we have Americans going over and joining these terrorist groups? Because they're trying to find some place to fit in. Mm-hmm. Has nothing to do with Islam. Has nothing right. to do with Christianity. And I think getting us to that point where we can have that dialogue.
Right.
So I'm an individual, okay, and I'm listening to One Mic, One Voice show. I don't know anything about Islam,
mm-hmm.
okay? I've heard stuff.
Yeah.
But can you, for our listeners, just talk a little bit about Islam?
Sure.
The true religion.
Sure. Well, Islam is one of the Abrahamic faiths. Along with Judaism and Christianity, Islam has its roots in the prophet Abraham. About 1,400 years ago in Saudi Arabia, with modern-day Saudi Arabia at that time, it wasn't, of course, the angel Gabriel came with revelation to a man named Muhammad, who is our prophet. And over the course of 23 years, the angel Gabriel continued to bring revelation, which we believe is the actual word of God, from God to the prophet Muhammad. And I mean, Islam is a religion of peace. If you pick up a copy of the Quran, and that's what I really encourage people to do, you know, they're readily available on Amazon.
On your phone.
There's apps for that. You know, or you guys can reach out to me. I mean, the organization we talked about earlier, careoklahoma.com, we'll send you a free copy. You know, we have no problem with that. We want people to read it and understand, because when you open that book, as I did, I wasn't born Muslim. You know, I converted when I was 17. I opened that book and I saw it was calling me to peace, to have good relations with my family, with my neighbors, to be at peace with myself and with God. And that's really what the religion is all about. We pray 5 times a day, because that's all about keeping that connection between us and God. We're actually right now in our holy month of Ramadan, where we're fasting from sunup to sundown, no food, no drink, you know, in 100-degree weather. And we're doing that to gain nearness to God.
Yeah.
And that's really what it's all about. So it's really misunderstood. I mean, when people start talking about radicalism and ISIS and all this stuff, that has nothing to do with religion. There's 1.6 billion Muslims in the world. At best, ISIS is 100,000 of them. Mm-hmm. That's not even 1%
yeah.
of the total worldwide population. Yeah. And so, I mean, if really think about this, and we need to think about it logically, if really Islam was a religion of terror, would there not be more violence in the world mm-hmm. with 1.6 billion people? But Absolutely. There's not,
yeah.
because we are not violent people. Yeah. And, you know, going back to your what you just mentioned, about, you know, radicalism within religions, there's always going to be extremists, you know, in all groups.
Yeah.
And that's just part of history, if we look at history. But I think what I would like people to realize is that as Muslims in America, we want to be a part of the solution. I don't know if there's a real immediate solution to really ridding our society and the world of these radical groups. But as Muslims in America, about 7 million of us, we would love to be a part of the solution. But once you start talking radical Islam and you start pushing us to the side and marginalizing us by trying to ban our you know, laws, Sharia law and stuff like that, then you're pushing us out of that conversation. Mm-hmm. And that becomes a real problem.
Yeah, yeah. Well said, man. I'm so happy you here, man. I don't know what to do. I mean, this is a show that I think so many people are going to benefit. So many misconceptions are going to be put to rest. And, folks, we're going to take a break, and we will be right back.
Hi, everyone. This is Roxy Davis.
And this is Deborah Burris. And we are
the Roxy by Design Show. Our show is designed to bring healing as we share our stories while God redesigns our lives.
So take a ride with us.
So you can find us at
Podbean, iTunes,
Facebook and Twitter,
and
blackandstudios.com. So thank you, everyone, for listening to the Roxy by Design Show. You have a blessed day.
And we love you.
This is Dr. Paul Ketchum, and I fully support One Mic, One Voice, and I recommend you do the same.
Welcome back to the One Mic, One Voice show. Man, we are here, and we're talking about, you know, just, I think, some of the most important things happening in our country at this time. We're in the election cycle. We got basically two presumptive candidates. One is an established politician. One has never worked in in government in their life. Man, hey, DT, don't you need some experience, man, to like to get the top job? I know there's some entry level, Adam, right? You can get entry level, right? But that ain't the presidency, is it?
No, not at all.
They don't look at your resume and say, oh, yeah, Kinko's good. Yeah, you fit the bill perfectly.
Yeah, should run for city council first.
Exactly. I'm saying, man.
Were you even a high school president?
But you know what? Let me. And this is just deviating a little bit, but my daughter said something to me that I think is so true. She talked about how the danger of Donald Trump is that he has changed the skill set for running for president.
Wow.
And you think about, and she talked about how Kanye West had talked about he was going to run. And she said, but no, Dad, you don't understand. A lot of people will vote for him.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So what has happened is the skill set, celebrity, popularity.
Yeah, that's what it's more like, a popularity.
We need
concept.
To be very careful that the next election is not filled with people that have never been in politics at all, but they are the most popular people in our country. That is scary and dangerous.
We need to have these conversations in schools.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, to prepare our kids to know the fluff from the genuine, you know?
Right.
Because like you said, Donald Trump carries no weight in the presidential election or to hold that position in true honor, you know? So I think we should be warning our future leaders, like, man, no. This is what we need. This is the kind of leadership we need, not just this clown who has money, who can just say what he wants and
buy the presidency.
Exactly.
The popularity. But you were talking during the break, DT, about, you know, this association or this correlation between kind of the black community and what's going on in the Muslim community. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Well, I was wanting to ask, you know, because you mentioned people will come and say, Mike, what does the black community think about radical Islam? And of course, you know, you can only tell them about what you feel like, but we don't sit in those circles when those conversations are actually being held. And we don't also feel the pressure of what it means to be a Muslim or identify as Islamic in America when these situations happen. So nobody's pressing you to say, Mike, we need to know how you feel because this is your area. So now that you're here, I just kind of want to know what what those conversations are like when you guys are trying to decide just kind of how to, I don't want to say save face, but because it seems like
distance yourself from these acts.
Because it seems like, you know, you're on the defensive almost all the time, just trying to be an upstanding person.
Right. Well, you know, it's interesting you bring that up. I mean, someone about a year, year and a half back, I visited with someone in Tulsa, and they asked me, they said, does ISIS present for you a huge public relations problem? And I was like, well, I didn't think about it that way, you know, but it is actually a problem. You know, we really have to work on marketing who we are as a community better. And we've done so through, you know, like public service ads on TV, billboards, and things like that. And I feel like that's what we're constantly trying to do, is trying to show people what Islam is really all about. Because you're right, when people think Muslim, they automatically think negative. And it's really a burden on the individual. And we actually do a program every summer called the Muslim Youth Leadership Symposium, where we bring young college students together and we make them we teach them leadership skills, but we also make them realize that you guys are the ambassadors for this faith. Whether you like it or not, that is the reality of what you're facing. And therefore, you've got to be a model citizen. You've got to be a model person on campus. You've got to find ways to build bridges of understanding, because that is crucial in the world we live in right now. And I've done it in my own life. It's not easy. It is really hard. I mentioned earlier, I worked for a state agency, and when I got there, first day on the job, I asked my supervisor, I said, is it okay if I pray, you know, and she's like, oh, well, let me get back to you, you know, because that's first time a Muslim, you know, works at the state agency, and she wants to, you know, check on this. So she went to the director, and I felt like she came and got me after she talked to the director. I said, come with me, and I felt like I'm walking to the principal's office, you know, and brought me in the director's office, and they just wanted to talk about it because they never had that question posed before. But they were really nice, and they said, well, do you want a private room, you know, to pray your afternoon prayer? Because we pray five times a day, morning, noon, afternoon, evening, sunset, and then night. So one or two of those prayers will fall during a normal work day. I'm like, you know what? It's okay. Can I just pray at my cubicle? And I did that intentionally. It was a little uncomfortable at first, but people got used to it. So I'd wheel my chair out to the edge of the cubicle. I had a little sign that says, can't talk while praying. Just take about 5-10 minutes, do my prayer in the afternoon. And next thing you know, it created a dialogue. Everyone in the office knew I was Muslim. I never had to say a word. They would come to me. I became the Muslim. You know, I had all the questions.
Resident Muslim.
Right. Go to Adam. And that really made me realize I've got to learn a lot more about my faith so I can answer these questions. But one thing I realized is when it came down to Thanksgiving. So I started in July. So it's a few months after I started. And I didn't want to go join the potluck because sometimes we don't eat pork and there's a lot of pork items and stuff. I was like, you know, it's okay. I have my lunch. I'll eat at my desk. I said, no, Adam, you've got to come join us for this potluck. And they took me in the room and they labeled the dishes that didn't have pork as pork free so that I could join them. Yeah. So it's amazing once you build these bridges and you kind of get out of your comfort zone and you're willing to put yourself out there, people really respond to it well.
And I think that when you were talking about, you know, just that last scenario, that's about coexisting, man. That's about, you know, that's about respecting you, you respecting them, and making space for you at the table. And not looking at you as being deficient, but looking at you as simply being different. I mean, that's just, you know, we're all different. But we need to respect that difference. And in past, it's been looked upon as being deficient. I mean, we do have religious freedom in this country, don't we?
We're supposed to.
I mean, how can we demonize a religion for the act of someone, or how can we demonize a religion simply because a person practices that faith when we have freedom of religion? What does freedom of religion mean, DT? Help me, man. What does it mean?
You know, we get a lot of contradicting messages, even from small, you know, from a kid. People will tell you, look, Mike, you can be whatever you want to be. You can go as far as you want to go, high as your hands can reach, right? But then when you grow up into yourself and you start finding yourself in these situations where you're exercising your skill, you're exercising your talents, you're exercising yourself to the point where other people are noticing, and then you get the flack, you get the resistance, you get the backlash, because it's like, well, that's cool, but I don't think you should be doing it like that. I don't think you should be saying it like that. I don't think you should be thinking about it like that. And so when you talk about freedom, it's limited because we're only at the mercy of the people who are interacting with us. Whether or not they understand us or choose to take time to figure out what's really going on, our freedom is sometimes taken away because we don't have the complete freedom to exercise who we are fully at all times.
Yeah, yeah. Well put, brother, well put. I can't add anything else to that. You're exactly right, especially that progression in which you describe, in which we find out. And what I like to say is sooner or later the world speaks to you. Mm-hmm. And you don't want to hear that, okay, because you were not taught that. You know, you came up thinking, as you say, you could be whatever you want to be. You could love who you wanted to love, this thing. And sooner or later the world speaks to you.
Lies.
And that's hard to digest.
It is. And, you know, as adults, you know, we have to backtrack then because now we're trying to understand, okay, well, what is the right thing? You know, what is truth? Yeah. What is the right way to go about being myself even in some ways? Because, like I said, once you get into a position where you're fully seeming to exercise that, there's a lot of people saying, nah,
exactly.
Don't do it like that.
Exactly. I mean, when I think about what this radical guy did in Orlando in this gay nightclub. You know, I pastors coming out condemning gay people. Coming out
I seen
applauding what this gentleman did. I mean, these are people that are leaders of congregations. I don't know, man. Sometimes I think I'm getting dumber. Sometimes I just think I'm losing my mind because I can't rationalize it. I can't understand. It just seems so absurd to me that if I was in that congregation and I heard someone say that, I would be so appalled. I would walk out. I would never go back. But these people are applauded by. I mean, what?
Doesn't make sense. And you know, there's a
pastor, huh?
There's pastors. An irony to that the Muslim community was the one standing shoulder to shoulder with the LGBT community in the wake of this, calling for equality, calling for protecting the rights and the lives of all people. Yet there are supposedly Christian pastors that are, you know, praising this. I mean, this horrendous act. And, you know, it's just unbelievable. But you know, when this happened here in Oklahoma City, I was truly appreciative of Freedom Oklahoma, the local LGBT rights organization, that they called me up and they said, Adam, we want you to come to our press conference because, you know, we have been allies for years and we want to make sure that we get this straight from the get-go, that it's not Muslims who did this. This is a radical individual, and that you as an individual and you as a community, we've always stood side by side, and we're going to continue to stand by side by side. So I was really appreciative of that.
And it was encouraging to see all of the different, I think, partnerships between the LGBT community and the Muslim community in Orlando. Yeah. I was very encouraged by the support that they received and how they talked about. It just didn't start that day. For years and years, they have been engaged in trying to make Orlando better. Right. And so I just, you know, we don't have this knowledge. You know, we don't hear about this.
Right.
And that's why I love what we do, brother, here at One Mic, One Voice. Because, you know, although on the national level, there's division being spoken, we know there's unity in areas in our country. We know people are fighting against this language, this divisive language that we need to continue to talk about. But what we're going to do, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, folks, I want to just dive a little bit deeper into this thing called, or I should say, this thing we used to call radical Islam. We'll be right back.
This is DT of the One Mic, One Voice podcast. Just want to let you guys know you can go over to iTunes and search us at One Mic, One Voice and be sure to rate and review our episodes. Let us know about any feedback that you have and what you enjoy about the episodes. Also, you can go over to Stitcher where you can get the latest and freshest episodes of our podcast streamed directly to your smartphone or iPad. No downloading or syncing. How cool? Real smooth. Also, we'd just like to take the time to thank you for your time and for your energy and for spending time with us as we discuss the historical record of our time.
Welcome back to the One Mic, One Voice show.
I like the way you put that at the end. Used to call. Yeah. we're not using that no more, right?
No, we're not using that no more. Matter of fact, we're gonna bury it right now. We have Adam Soltani in here with us, Executive Director of the Council on American Islamic Relations, and we've talked about separating. There's radical people. There's, and I like how you said within every religion, if you study history, there's always going to be some type of radical movement. Doesn't hijack the religion. The religion still is the religion.
Right.
We have to call it what it is. These are radical individuals doing heinous acts with whatever perversion they have made out of the religion.
Absolutely.
And people, some people are just easily influenced by that. That's just what it is. Yeah. But what I want to say, though, is this, and this might get some of our listeners a little upset, but you know, they get upset at me from time to time anyway. Matter of fact, you see what I had to post on Facebook. We might talk about that here in a minute. But listen, the West, okay, the actions of the West in a lot of ways have made it fertile ground for these radical people to stand up against the West and the influence of the West in other countries where we should not be. Iraq should have never went there. Mm-hmm. Never went to Iraq. Why did we go? Weapons of mass destruction. What did we find? Okay.
Weapons of nothing.
Okay. Okay. We spent billions of dollars. We're still spending billions of dollars in that country. We tore the country up. We tore it apart. We took away law enforcement there.
Yeah.
Turned them loose with no jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm trying to say is we have a responsibility as a country. We can talk about radical this, radical that. We have a responsibility as a country as being part of creating that radicalism.
Hmm. I think you brought up the point that no one wants to talk about. That's the one thing that I think a lot of people realize, but they just don't want to talk about it. Because when you talk about ISIS, what they call the Islamic State, that's another term that needs to be dropped because they are not Islamic whatsoever. But Iraq and Syria is the second IS. Iraq was destroyed by us as a country being there. Syria has been destroyed by a civil war over several years. As I mentioned earlier, the largest refugee population in the world right now is Syrians. So what are we doing to help? If we really want to help people, that's what I don't understand. We're always talking about wanting to go and save people, wanting to help spread democracy. Mm. What are we doing about Syria? They're fighting and killing each other. I mean, it's really, it hurts me so much. And it's almost to the point you can't even look at it when you see some of these pictures on social media of the bombs. Of the people that are just, you know, torn to pieces, their bodies everywhere, the mothers crying over their children's being killed. But as a country, we seem to ignore that. And why did we go into Iraq? Why did we go into Afghanistan? Why did we go in these other countries looking for things that didn't even exist, yet we don't even care about what's going on in Syria right now? So that is a huge issue, and I don't know how we're ever going to, as a country, come to a point where we can actually have that discussion, because it seems like no one wants to talk about that. They only want to talk about the, you know, the radical stuff we've been discussing. So, you know, we really hopefully can get to that soon, because that is where the real solution lies.
And I think it calls for us to be honest with ourselves and honest with our position in the world, honest with the things that we've done. And I think people are so dug in with their own ideology and the false narrative of America being, and I have to say this every time. Listen, I'm a veteran. I did 13 years in the Navy, okay? I served this country. So I hear people always sit up and say, well, you know, you don't love this country. I served this country. What did you do? Okay, number one. Number two, we have done things. We have done things that has caused people to look at America not as the average American sees us.
Right.
And when we have bombed places, when innocent, as you say, when mothers have lost it, there was more Iraqis that lost their lives, civilians. Now, when you lose your child, you lose your husband, you lose your wife, how do you think you're going to view? What if we were bombed and you lost your wife, you lost your child? How would you view that country? So what I'm saying is forever,
no matter what happens.
So I'm saying is we have a personal responsibility in trying to go out, as you tried to say, what's going on in Syria. If we really want to stop the spread of radicalism overseas, but I said we need to stop the spread of radicalism right here before we even go.
We were the first radicals, huh?
Okay, so, I mean, we don't want to go down history lane. We have before, but maybe this is not the time. But we need to own up
right
to what we have done as a country. Our hands are not clean.
That's true. And the last episode we talked about, you know, why do we hate and the reasons why people hate. And we also talked about America's response always being retaliation, always being some other form of hatred or
aggression.
Aggression, right. And so, you know, we're saying, how do we get to a resolve? How do we make peace? How do we have meaningful conversations about the issues that we're having? But when will we ever be able to talk if we only discuss bombing each other?
Right, right. And, you know, it's interesting you bring up, you had to clarify you're a veteran, you know. I mean, people, that's an issue where I sometimes feel like I'm afraid to talk about because people want to say, well, if you don't like it, just go back home. Right. And my response is, I'm not going back to Kansas. I don't like it there. You know? Because people think that because you're Muslim, there's some magical country named Islamistan that you can go back to. This is my home.
Absolutely.
And this is the home for the vast majority of Muslims. One-third of the Muslim population in America are African Americans. So that means one-third of our population is indigenous to this country, has been here for generations. Yeah. And then another one-third are people like me who were born in America. And then perhaps another one-third are people who have immigrated like my father. So, you know, two-thirds of the American Muslim population are born and raised in America. Where are we going to go? We're part of this country, and we want to see things improve. We're proud to be in this beautiful country that has religious freedom, that has a great opportunities for education and economic success, but we also want to see the improvement of things such as the foreign policy towards Muslim countries.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, even on it's beneficial to us.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, and if we want to continue to move our country forward, if we want to continue to compete in a global market, we have to build healthy relationships with other countries. It serves us no good to have it. I don't know what. Just think about on the micro level. Who gets up and says, I want enemies? You know, I want more enemies. It doesn't serve you well to have enemies. Sometimes you can't avoid it.
That idea is out there, though. You know, people say, if you don't have no haters, you're not doing nothing. that's pretty much volunteering yourself to some.
When you put yourself out there to do something, I think I had a quote that I put up in our group page. That Aristotle had said about criticism. Richard's gonna try to find that. I can't. But to the point, you will have some of that. But I don't think nobody wants that, though.
Right.
I mean, that's a byproduct of doing something with your life, standing on principle. You're gonna have people that disagree with you and that criticize you. Look at Dr. King. Look at Malcolm X. Look at folks that stood on principle. And so the quote was, to avoid criticism, say nothing, do nothing, be nothing. Say nothing, do nothing, be nothing, if you want to avoid criticism.
And somebody still might have something to say about it. Like, look at me doing nothing.
But so in the sense that we have these acts, and we're always looking for some connection because the human condition is that we want to understand why it happened.
Mm-hmm.
What I want to get across, Adam, and thank you again for being here with us today. What I want to get across is that there is no simple answer.
No.
People are complex. Mm-hmm. We're complex. Our experiences, what we went, just because I went to a Christian church all my life, if I go out and kill up a bunch of people, it ain't because I went to that church.
Right.
It's because there's some issues going on in my life that I didn't know how to properly deal with. This man, as they said, he could have been bisexual. He could have been gay. He could have been dealing with that issue in his own life, and the anger or the identity struggle that he was going through. Who knows? But you cannot. It's easy for us in our country. And I want our listeners to understand. It's not just saying radical Islam, but it's also saying stereotyping any minority group as being criminal, violent, simply because of an act of somebody that might be loosely associated with the group.
Absolutely. You know, I think what we really need to do is we need to really learn how to connect as human beings and stop labeling each other. You know, this is a thing where in our, you know, we're taught as kids that, you know, we have all this stuff in common. But as you mentioned, as we grow older, then we start to separate each other into groups by saying, no, he's a Muslim, he's a Christian, he's a Jew, you know, he's white, he's black. I mean, what we have to connect on a human level.
Yeah.
And when we connect on a human level and realize that we have a lot more in common than we do different, then things will start to change. And we have examples of that in our state and in our country. I mean, when the Moore tornado happened, one of my very close friends, he and his wife and his, their twin sons, they were actually in the tornado. Their whole house was destroyed, except the master closet where they were huddled over each other. And I went down there about 24 hours after it happened. I was able to get in because I was with him to help him gather some of his belongings. And you know, through that challenge of overcoming the loss of house and properties and all that, people were coming by. They weren't asking, are you Muslim? Are you this? Are you that? Do you need help? Mm-hmm. Do you need food? Do you need water? I mean, at least four or five people stopped by offering us food and water, offering assistance. It's unfortunate that we have to get to tragedies, natural disasters, to come together. Why can't we do that all the time? You know, why can't we break bread? You know, which is a very common theme in many religions. Why can't we break bread as people and have open, honest conversations and agree to disagree? You know, I might be a Muslim. I might have one belief. You might be a Christian. You might have a different belief. But why can we not discuss those things without feeling that where my, you know, my freedom to practice my religion does not encroach on your freedom to practice your religion or live your life the way you want to? I think we can get there, but we really have to work at it.
Well, I mean, you said a mouthful. It's it's a tremendous, I think, charge for our nation. I'm an optimistic person, and I hate to say but, because that's always a negative connotation. But
realistic.
I just when I hear people talk and the fears that they have, I just don't know how to move them beyond their fears because they refuse to get into those conversations, to have those experiences. Like, I live here. I'm not going to go anywhere else. I'm not going to speak to anybody else. And generationally, they continue. Now, what I will say, we're making inroads of America. Was what it was. No, we made great progress, but I just, it's like we're at a point right now where we're not moving.
Right,
we're actually moving backwards. And according to his phrase, "Make America Great Again."
Mm.
I don't know when that was. I'm still trying to figure it out. Was it when my folks were picking cotton? I mean, was it when you know, when Jim Crow was up and I had to go to the black water fountain? I don't know when was it in the 60s when fire hoses were being used? I don't know.
I had a crazy experience just last week. I was coming out of the academy and I parked my car and somebody had texted me, so I'm looking down at my phone. And by the time I looked up, there was a big black truck parked across from me, in the parking lot, and they have like one of those red caps that says, you know, make America great again. That's the first thing I noticed, because, you know, the car is black and it's this big red thing in the dashboard. And so obviously when I looked up, I'm looking at this hat, I'm like, okay, make it great. And then I noticed that the driver was looking right at me, like in my eyes, like staring at me. I'm like, okay, this is weird. But so I got out the car and I'm thinking to myself, okay, well, if that's his idea, right? If that's something that he agrees with, that America should be great again, is this the type of interaction you want to have in such an America? That he'd open up his eyes or I'd look up and we'd be staring at each other.
Yeah.
Kind of in this weird, what are you going to do type of feel, you know? And I'm like, okay, well, what does that mean to people? Make America great again when we're having these. I mean, like, I wasn't doing anything wrong.
Yeah.
I simply looked up from my phone, and to my surprise, this cat was just looking right at me like, well, I mean, and obviously he didn't know me because pretty.
He might have told you to go back to Africa. You don't like America, go back to Africa. That's what I just told him. Like, well,
I would have told him, I just got back. Beautiful place. Can't wait. Can't wait.
But, you know, speaking of that statement, I think there are aspects of our country that are great. You know, our diversity is really something that we can consider as one of the greatest assets of our nation. But we're not celebrating it.
Yeah.
You know, the freedoms that we do have, the Constitution that protects those freedoms, there are aspects of our country that can be great. Mm-hmm. But I took a class at OU, University of Oklahoma, with Dr. George Henderson. Are you guys familiar with him?
That's one of my mentors.
Yeah, I mean, I took his class. I was told to take his class, and I'm so glad I listened to my advisor, and I did, because that was the most inspirational class I've ever taken in my life. I read his book, Race in the University, which is a must-read about, you know, the challenges of being a black student at OU in the 60s and 70s.
Yes.
But, you know, he was involved in so much, the desegregation of schools in Little Rock and Oklahoma City. He was part of the civil rights movement. And so I asked him, I said, Dr. Henderson, you've lived through it. I'm fighting this civil rights thing on a day-to-day basis, but you've lived through so much of it. Have things really changed? And his answer to me was no. Mm-hmm. We've taken small steps, but so much hasn't changed. And I think if we want to make America great again, it's not by electing Mr. Trump, you know,
absolutely.
But it's by fixing the root problems that have plagued our nation for centuries, you know, when still in this country, people, as you mentioned, people will look at you with a sense of hatred just because of your skin color or your religion, then we have some deep-seated issues that have never been resolved.
And I just smiled at him, of course, man, because I don't want any problems with anybody.
You know,
but
no, go ahead.
To your point, though, you know, you mentioned civil rights and the Muslims kind of plight almost being the exact same as the African Americans, what we've dealt with in the country. And to me right now, there is really no separation. You mentioned you guys standing arm in arm with the LGBT community,
right?
You know, in light of what was happening. And I guess I'm kind of retracting, because I'm like, okay, well, that's one example, right? That's something that was done. You know, you didn't have to wish it would happen. You didn't have to hope that it was going to happen. You guys got together, you sat down, you came with a plan, and you executed it. So is that easy, really, when we're talking about how to move forward? Is a matter of really getting together and sitting down and saying, look, man, this is what we need to do. Yeah. Let's do it. Let's quit talking about it so much.
That's it. I mean, really, it's just it doesn't take much to move in the right direction, you know, and to really start breaking down these barriers. I think the problem is people are afraid of taking that initial step. People don't want to get out of their comfort zone. It's really hard to sit down and have a conversation. I've experienced it myself. I used to have real challenges sitting down and having conversations with people, but you force yourself to do it, you know, and then you get to a point where you feel really comfortable, because we're insecure. And I think that's it goes back to our insecurities as people. We're insecure in what we believe sometimes. We're insecure in what we do. And so for me to have a conversation as a Muslim with a Christian or a Jew or even an atheist, I have to be really secure in who I am to know that what we talk about is not going to cause me to believe less in what I who I am as a person. So I think people are really insecure in that. And there was a really good study about these anti-Sharia laws that have just been going around the country trying to be passed in every state by the Institute of Social Policy and Understanding. It's a think tank out in D.C. And they said that these Sharia laws are not about Islam. It's not about Muslims, but it's about the fear of the growing diversity we have in this country, and that the people in power don't want to lose control because there's a growing Muslim population, because there's people who are different and they don't know how to deal with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We failed to update. Like on your phone, every so often you get a little update notification. Like, man, it's time to upgrade yourself or your phone not going to work no more.
Yeah. America.
America function on that old iOS system.
That's right.
We need to upgrade. We need to update ourselves.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think what's crucial in all of that is that's happening on the local level. And I've said this before, we cannot look to the national level to bring true leadership. Mm. It's got to start on the local level. And that's even with the individual. Once you fix yourself, then you can reach out and help others.
Right.
Until that local level gets right, you're never going to be able to challenge what's going on the national level.
Mm-hmm.
They're just going to push you one direction or the other. And, oh, man, it's been a dynamic show, and
I came in late, but it was really great to catch up and jump into the action.
You're right on time, man. I mean, you know, we had went into a few things, but Adam, as I said when we started off, there are people, okay, and I know some are popping in my head that you can reach out to them and say, hey, why don't you come on and talk about this? And man, you got to go through everybody to get to
mm-hmm.
it. Man, thankful to Rabbi Harris. You know, I just emailed her and she, boom, I got an email. She copied Adam on it. We talked and Adam said, I'll be there. And see, that's what I'm talking about, man. That's so I could tell right then that you have a heart, not just for the Muslim community, but for Oklahoma and for the larger community in general.
Yeah.
And that means a lot to me, man, because I can also tell you this. And DT and Richard know what I'm talking. We're extremely selective about who we bring on this show.
I appreciate it.
I'm going to be honest with you, man.
Yeah, Mike is working on like a 50-page application.
Wow, I feel special. I really
I'm like,
do.
Mike, wow, really? He's like, yeah, DT, man, it's serious.
Hey, trust me, we've had some people, and I'm like, no, that's just not going to happen.
Wow.
No, because, you know, our goal is to educate, to dispel, you know, to make sure that people have the knowledge that they need to grow.
Yeah,
and to empower people in a way and to be a platform, really, that people can get information that is a little challenging, you know, that but they can be part of the process. And so, you know, thank you so much. We want to definitely have you come back on.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And, as things happen, just come back on and talk about the organization, talk about what's going on in the Muslim community, I think would be really, really great idea. Because as you say, man, we have to learn how to deal with one another on a human level.
Right.
You know, we're all part of the human race. Beyond that, because, as I always say, history will speak of us. Somewhere in the distant future, a scribe will reach down deep into the archives of our time, and what will she find? Will she discover that we overcame our differences? Will she find that out of many, we became one? Or will she find that we solved nothing and remain a divided people? Yes, history will speak of us.
We can make a difference if we try. We can beat the change that's in our lives. All we gotta do is work together. We gotta raise our children better. We gotta stop the hate, and spread the love.
One mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice. One mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice.
One
mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice.
One
mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice.
Your choice.
Today's broadcast is being brought to you by Blacken Studios. To learn more about Blacken Studios, please visit them at blackenstudios.com or visit them on their Facebook page, Blacken Studios. Today's broadcast is also being brought to you by Perry Publishing and Broadcasting. To learn more about Perry Publishing and Broadcasting, please visit their website at perrypublishingandbroadcasting.net. The opinions of the One Mic, One Voice show do not reflect the views of Blacken Studios or Perry Publishing and Broadcasting. Thank you for downloading the One Mic, One Voice show.